call the Senate Finance meeting to order. Today is Thursday, March 13th. Time is 9:12. Again, apologize for the late start. We were hoping to have both the Senate Bill 138, the gas bills, and Senate Bill 64, the crime bill. We're very close, I understand, on both of them. I can speak on the crime bill. We're just waiting on a fiscal note. And it was a pretty hefty bill, if you recall, so the fiscal note is important. And Senator Kelly, I think you're pretty close on the gas bill as well?
That's correct.
Okay. So there's a good chance that we'll finish early here, and then we'll go, we'll recess to the call of the chair and come back later today to pick those two up. So with us today, though, is Co-Chair Kelly.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Chair Meyer. And Senator Dunleavy, before we get started, did you have a comment?
Yeah, to the chair,
there was
lots of donuts out there.
The old donuts.
There's a tremendous amount of vegetables out there, and I would ask that please go enjoy yourself. It's Donut Vegetable Thursday here in Senate Finance. One last thing, Mr. Chair. I can't find my phone, so this may be the last time you get donuts.
It's good.
Tell my staff to belay that order.
Okay, and I did confer with the co-chair, Kelly. We do have a rule that we don't allow food in here. We will make an exception today since Senator Dunleavy has been so kind to provide us with vegetables and donuts.
Donuts.
Yes. So, okay, today's agenda, we have a confirmation hearings for the State Assessment Review Board and then also Senate Bill 194. We do have the candidates online for the confirmation hearings, so we're going to start with the confirmation hearings for the State Assessment Review Board. One candidate has withdrawn. Dennis Mendel has withdrawn his name for consideration. So the only candidate that we'll hear from today is Bernie Washington. So if there's nothing to come before the committee at this time, let's go right to the confirmation hearings. And do we have Bernie Washington online?
Okay. Yes, this is Bernie. I'm online.
All right. Okay. Well, I see on your resume here your real name is Bernard Washington, but you prefer to go by Bernie. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Very good, Bernie. So, Bernie, you've submitted your name for consideration for the Assessment Review Board, the public seat. Do you have any opening introductory remarks that you'd like to make before we open it up to questions to the Finance Committee?
I would like to say the reason I submitted my name was that I believe that we Alaskans need to participate in the process, and you have to give back, and I thought that I have some expertise that would lend to that board, and so I thought it would be, something that I could do to give back to the state.
Okay. Well, very good. Mr. Washington, okay, it's my understanding this is a non-paid position?
Yes.
Okay. You're currently employed with the public media, public radio, public TV, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, do you see any concerns with working there and also serving on the Assessment Review Board?
We are making sure that there are no overt conflicts. Right now, we haven't determined any.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Washington, I was wondering, in this position that I'm kind of unfamiliar with, what have you done in the past that has been related to the position you're put your name in for?
Okay. for the last, before I retired from the oil industry, I spent 35 years there. My last 15 years, I worked in the pipeline area, and I was responsible for taps, taps valuation, taps tariffs. I was did cost analysis on the reconfiguration projects for taps. I also was involved with our other pipelines, the Alpine and Kuparik pipelines, and I did evaluation and tariff analysis for those pipelines.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue.
Please.
As you look at the pipeline and the controversy that surrounds it, can you tell me, give me some ideas on what your thoughts are on Judge Gleason's decision related to its evaluation?
Well, when you get beyond about 10 or 15 years in a life of an asset such as TAPS, the uncertainty increases. And one of the biggest uncertainties is where the crude's going to come from to hopefully fill the line. And if, in fact, the crude is offshore and the environmental considerations that are happening up there, in other words, the somewhat warming of the Arctic Ocean, there presents other opportunities to, move crude, ice-breaking tankers or whatever. So at least in my mind, you need to assess what are all the other potential transportation opportunities and chance weight those with respect to the value of TAPS.
My last question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Olson.
As you've looked at, you talked about being working for the oil industry. I was wondering what kind of experience you had with natural gas and some of your thoughts on this natural gas, liquefied natural gas project that we are currently undertaking.
It's been a while, but the real question you have to ask yourself is how any natural gas project will compete on the world market, especially because of our higher cost nature. We have to put a long pipeline in to get the gas to Tidewater, where there are other places around the world that are closer and can access transportation systems more readily. So that's going to be a difficult problem, and we have to pick the right time to get into the slot for selling our gas on the world market.
Sounds like he's well versed in the field, Mr. Chairman. I do have one last question, though.
Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Washington, I see that you're registered, or at least your mailing address is Anchorage. Have you lived in any place else in Alaska besides Anchorage?
No, I've been in Anchorage since 1982.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Senator Olson. Full disclosure, I do know Bernie, he's not what you would normally classify as an oil executive, but certainly he does have a lot of experience in the oil industry. But I also know that Bernie's been very active in the community there in Anchorage. Mr. Washington, can you tell us about some of the other boards and commissions that you serve on? I know you were the accountant, a volunteer accountant, I believe, at the Beans Soup Kitchen.
I'm the treasurer of the board for Beans. I've been the treasurer for the last 15 or so years. I just turned off the board at Alaska Community Foundation, and I was treasurer there for 5 years. For the municipality, I served as chair of the Public Facilities Commission for a number of years, and I also served as chair of the Health and Human Services Commission way back when. I also helped start the 4-Acre Group. I was the treasurer there for 12 years before I termed off. And so I truly believe that to make a good society, you have to give back. And I believe in public service. I don't think I would want to do you guys' job. That's a little too tough. But I do believe in giving back.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Washington. Senator Hoffman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Washington, it says that additional board or commission interests, you list two others, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and the RCA, and I might wonder if you might comment what your interests are.
Bernie, did you hear the question?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't hear any question.
Okay, Senator Hoffman, can you repeat your question?
Yes, Mr. Washington, under additional board interests or commission interests, you list Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and the RCA, and what are your interests in regards to both of those?
Oh, I thought it would be, you know, if the opportunity presented itself, I thought it would be, you know, something that I would be interested in. I've worked with Mike Burns. He's on the investment committee for the Community Foundation with me. We both served on that, and I really enjoy that type of analysis. That's kind of what really floats my boat. So, you know, that type of activity is why I looked at both those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bernie, everything I have heard about you and read about you seems as if you're qualified, and that's probably the most important thing we can determine. You know, direct my comments away from you, Bernie, and to the committee. You know, most of the people that come before us, it's been my experience that there really isn't a lot of debate. Most people on both sides of the aisle, generally speaking, if the governor wants an appointee, then that's who we'll give them, as long as through the process something doesn't pop up. And today one of the people that was being held for consideration actually withdrew his name. And we've seen that over time, that there isn't a high level of scrutiny at the committee level, because generally we read the resumes, we ask around, they seem okay. We want to give the governor, whoever that might be, who they want. Boards of hairdressers, assessors, permanent, yeah, on and on and on. We have these people who are members of boards and commissions that we scrutinize. We are the eyes of the people. In our Constitution, the power of the government is transferred from the people to the legislature, and we sit here in their stead and we examine these people. And as I said, mostly you don't have a high level of scrutiny at the table, because most people are generally qualified. That's how they get to the top. Now I'm segueing away from this bill just for a moment. Please indulge me. Yet with selecting our judges, we don't do that. We have three members appointed by the Bar Association. That's it. They're appointed. They don't go through our process. The governor doesn't appoint them. The people never get to lay eyes on them, because it's just not done that way. It's a flaw in our Constitution. And as a result, we have people who are selected by a guild for people who will work in that guild. And then the other person is the Supreme Court Justice, who then breaks ties should the people from the Judicial Council have a tie. And that person is not confirmed by the legislature either. They do sit for elections every 10 years, something like that. But anyway, I think it's a good point that we are going to talk to Mr. Washington and others, all the way down to boards and commissions that you wouldn't even think exist. I mean, some of these things, when you hear the people being nominated, it's the first time you even hear that we have a board that does that. But by gosh, we're going to run them through the scrutiny of this body, because the people have a right to understand who is pulling the levers of their government. But not, for some reason, for Bar Association members appointed to the Judicial Council. I have a little bill to fix that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you,
Senator. Thanks for your indulgence, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Okay. Anything else for Mr. Washington so he can get back to work? Senator Bishop.
Good morning, Mr. Washington, and I don't envy you, because I've been through a confirmation process myself and have been asked questions. So here's my question to you. I look at your employment history here, and the last 15, and it looks like it's all been in oil and gas North Slope activities currently, most recently, last 15 years. I believe you said you worked on TAPS?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you said you worked on the Strategic Reconfiguration Project?
Correct.
And And do you think that adds value to the pipeline, the SR work?
Well, what it does is it gives the pipeline the ability to handle varying crude amount. The old pumps were pretty much a certain speed, so they couldn't you know, the variation in crude supply was much more difficult to handle. And the reason we went to the electric pumps and everything is that they can handle a wider range of variation in throughput, which is what unfortunately what we're seeing nowadays.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator Bishop. Any other questions for Mr. Washington? Okay, seeing none, we're going to just take a brief at ease. I'm having something copied, so just brief at ease. Okay, Senator Finance is back. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to advance the name of Bernard Washington for appointment to the State Assessment Review Board.
Okay, is there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, then the name of Bernard Washington will be forwarded to the full membership of the legislature in joint session for consideration and final vote. Again, signing the report. Regarding the appointments to boards and commissions in no way reflects the individual's members' approval or disapproval of the appointees, and that the nominations are merely forwarded to the full legislature for confirmation and or rejection. That's Uniform Rule 4-6. Okay, so that sheet's going around. Please sign it, and we'll go ahead and go on then to the next item before us. Yes, Senator Fairclough. Briefly. All right, Senate Finance is back. Okay, that we're finished with the confirmation hearings. We'll go on now to Senate Bill 194, which is the Tourism Marketing Board. This bill is Senator McGuire's bill, and she is here with us. Senator McGuire, if you would please join us and bring your trusty staff, Genevieve Watusik, I hope.
You got it.
Okay. Senator McGuire, if you could introduce yourself and tell us what your bill does. The floor is yours.
First of all, good morning. I'm Senator Lisa McGuire. I represent Southwest Anchorage, District K, and it's good to see all of you. I miss this room and I miss the staff. It's beautiful to see all your faces, and I love the new painting. So that's gorgeous. Today I'm here to introduce Senate Bill number 194. And this is a product of a lot of conversation. As you know, Mr. Chairman, over the years, you and I have rotated, I would say, between carrying the travel industry's agenda toward creating a more robust marketing strategy for the state of Alaska. And we've looked at it from a variety of different ways, different kinds of matching funds, different amounts for general funds, different compositions of boards and things like that. And what we've come up with now is a model that has worked in other states, and it is the creation of an Alaska Tourism Marketing Board. And the notion is to create a formalized relationship between the Department of the Community and Economic Development and a private sector-based board. And the reason for that is obvious. These are the folks who are on the ground all across the state looking at tourism and its impact. And the reason for formalizing it is that over the years, depending on who's been the commissioner, depending on what administration, depending on what legislature chooses to put an emphasis on tourism, there's been a more or less successful partnership. And so this would formalize it in statute and create a truly diverse regional representation and a formalized relationship. So, Mr. Chairman, the board would consist of representatives, 21 of them, and it does sound cumbersome when you look at it, and I want to explain a little bit from the industry's perspective about how they arrived at that number. And I think the member from Galvin and the member from Bethel in particular are going to appreciate this, because I follow when the board appointments come up all the time. They're questioning, you know, how long have you lived in Anchorage, have you lived in other parts of the state, etc. And that was one of the concerns, and you'll see in the letters of support that tourism for the state of Alaska is a statewide issue, and what it means to market to a tourist in Southeast Alaska or the Arctic is something completely different than marketing to someone in the interior who might be a cruise ship passenger. And then there are different categories of tourists that come. We have the accommodations, the activities and attractions, people who take you out whitewater rafting if you want to go, transportation, the cruise travel that comes in, tour operators, and then what they are calling destination management organizations. So the board itself will be divided into five regions. You will have four members in each of those regions representing each of those distinct categories. And then the three that come from the government side, if you will, are the Commissioner of the Department of Economic Development, or his or her designee, and then one member of the Senate selected by the President of the Senate, and then one member of the House selected by the Speaker of the House. So that puts us involved as well. You'll note that the fiscal note has been zeroed out, and the reason for that is a belief that the general fund currently provides and has provided through the years through the legislature money to tourism for marketing, and that there is money within that particular allocation to fund any per diem that would be needed. But I want to emphasize something that's really exciting about this board to me. When these women and men came to me, they're looking for an opportunity basically to volunteer. They're not asking for pay. There might be some per diem involved in travel or something along the way, but basically this is a board of people who engage in tourism professionally day in and day out that want to volunteer to help create a statewide tourism strategy, marketing strategy for the state. So if you look at the bill, it's divided into a few components, and I'm happy to answer questions. Section one, of course, is the purposes. And we can see that expansion and growth of our state's visitors industry will benefit all of us. We know this, especially Mr. Chairman and members of this Finance Committee. You're the ones looking at the numbers every day. I don't have to remind you that our main source of income in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline revenue is going down. We have efforts underway to try and increase new development, but we don't know how those will fare. We're hopeful. We're optimistic. But we have to continue to diversify our state's economy. So we also want to ensure that a maximum number of residents of the state are employed as well. And that's one of the things I think this board is really going to be helpful in doing, is how to increase the number of job opportunities, the job fairs, training, working with our university in the areas that are open for employment. And then, of course, moving along to Section 2, that is simply formalizing the relationship. That's referencing Title 44, formalizing the relationship between the Department of the Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And again, as you know, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, you'll get different people that head up these departments, different governors with different emphases that come through the years. And what we want to do is just put it in statute so it's very clear that this is the legislature's intent, that this board will continue on in perpetuity. And then finally, number three sets up the board itself. It's fairly straightforward. There'll be at least three nominees in each of these areas put forward by the Alaska Travel Industry Association itself. And the feeling there, of course, is that these are the professionals, the ones who are working in the industry that know best who should be there. We don't want, if we can, we'd like to not politicize this board. We'd like to make it people who really don't even know if they're, you know, what the party affiliation is. They just know they're in there to do a good job marketing for the state of Alaska. They'll meet at least twice a year. We've been dealing with this in another committee in judiciary that, believe it or not, you can put a board in statute, and unless you mandate and say shall, they don't actually have to meet. So it's really important that you put shall in there. And then, of course, there's a rotation on the terms, and that's on page 4. That's just sort of to reflect some institutional knowledge, the way that we do in the House and the Senate, so that you don't have everyone up for election at the same time. You've got 6 members that will serve 3 terms, 6 members serving 2 terms, and then finally, Mr. Chairman, 6 members serving for 1 term. I'd be happy to take any questions. There are members of the industry behind me here who are passionate and would love to talk about it. I also, Robbie Graham is here from the department as well.
Great. Thank you, Senator McGuire. While members are contemplating questions, one question I have, I'll have to admit that this committee's a little gun-shy, if I can use that word, on starting up any more new boards and commissions. We spend a lot of time reviewing sunsets of boards and commissions. Our auditor is spending a lot of time doing the audits on various boards and commissions. And actually, we just had a board in the omnibus crime bill, as you know, Senator McGuire, that we discussed. But this board does seem to be different, and certainly we want to exploit the tourism business in this state. We have to build up something else besides just oil and gas. So I personally feel like this is an important board. However, if we are going to set up a new board, would you be amenable to having a sunset and having it subject to audit at some point?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Through the chair, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think, you know, I look over to Senator Fairclough and the work that she's doing in legislative budget and audit. I think it's incumbent on us to continue to look at all the boards and commissions and whether we need to have them. An example that we discovered in judiciary yesterday, there was a commission on the books since 1982 on sentencing fairness in the area of drug sentences that had never even been activated, as one example. So there may be some boards and commissions that the state really can benefit from and others that we don't benefit from at all. And it's sort of that broader look rather than the cookie cutter approach that says no boards and commissions benefit. And I know you agree. In certain cases, particularly tourism marketing, you know, the state really just isn't equipped as a public entity to do it all on their own. They just don't have that kind of expertise, and frankly, with the budget cuts we have, not only would I not, from a philosophical point of view, want to build up the expertise within the public sector, but we simply don't have that ability. So this is a way to leverage our private sector expertise, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good, Senator McGuire. And then on page four, where you state six members for 3 years, six members for 2 years, six members for 1 year, is there 21 members total? Is that?
Yes.
Okay, so what happens to the other three?
Yeah, okay, so the other three that are appointed by the president, the Speaker of the House, and then, of course, it's the commissioner. So I have to think through that, but I think it sort of just follows their appointment, right?
Not sure.
If you...
Oh, the term of the...
Term of the particular official. So it would be a state senator, it would be a state representative, and then, of course, it would be whoever the commissioner was at the time. So they have political offices that reference. So they're not a part of that that outlay. You're correct.
Yeah, that would make sense, I guess, for the House and Senate member. I don't know about the appointee of the administration.
But I think we'd always, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I think we'd always want the commissioner there, though, or their designee. I think that's a constant presence, irrespective, we'd want.
And then as far as an effective date goes, you want this just to the normal effective date of whenever the bill gets signed, and or do you want to have any thoughts on this?
We didn't put one in, but, you know, that might be a question for the gentleman behind me. Maybe they're looking for some acceleration, especially if you're going to put a sunset in it. Maybe you reward them by getting them to work earlier.
Okay. Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to my comment on the previous bill that we heard. In Section C on page 3, the governor shall appoint the members under B1 of this section from a list of three nominees for each seat submitted by the Alaska Travel Industry Association. The governor may reject a list for any seat submitted under this subsection and request that another list be submitted. When we are choosing the people that choose our judges, he nor does anyone else have the authority to reject that list. Thank you for putting it in here.
You're welcome.
Because we value a connection in our society to elected individuals representing the people when it comes to choosing these different people. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Gotten that in twice today now, Senator.
I know. I've been distracted by SB 138, so you'll be hearing more about this.
I must be the donuts. Okay, is there any other? Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator McGuire, I guess one of the questions I have, when you look at a board that has in excess of 20 members, it seems like it's fairly cumbersome to try and bring up any kind of or come to any conclusion in an expeditious manner. How do you plan on, I mean, it almost seems unwielding to a certain degree. How do you plan on, how does the board plan on overcoming some of those, where one faction wants to go one way and another faction wants to go another way?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's an excellent question. It was the first question that I asked of the gentlemen who are behind me, and I'd like to have them talk on the record about it, because, you know, we've had other examples recently, Senator Kelly's bill in the Judicial Council, where I've kind of been more inclined to reduce numbers, knowing about that tendency to have too many voices in the room. But they'll explain to you that they really feel that this is the way to get buy-in, that the problems in the past have been that you end up excluding one region, and that there's then a perception that this is benefiting one over another or one particular type of tourism operator, and that this is the fairest way. If it were me, I would probably assign subcommittees, and I would have subcommittee chairs that report to the chair. There's a chairperson selected and a vice chair selected, so there'll be some level of overall control like you have here today with your chairman, and I think that will help. But, you know, what I like about the sunset and the legislative audit provision is, you know, this is an experiment, and I think it's going to be a good one, but it's always important for us to come back and allow the industry to reflect and us to reflect on, is it the right size and is it working and are we getting out of it what we thought? But I'd like to let them talk, if I might, Senator Olson. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Thanks, Senator Olson. Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the members on page 2, line 31, you say 18 members who represent different regions of the state, and I'm wondering what your response would be to have an additional sentence after the state, including but not limited to the Arctic, the interior, the south central, southeast, and southwest.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I would love it. I have the regional list right here, but I think, again, for purposes of institutional clarity, I think it's great.
Thank you, Mr.
Thanks,
Chairman.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Bishop.
Yes, just thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just along those same lines, dovetailing on to Senator Hoffman's comments is, you know, I 2 years ago now this summer, I put about 21,000 miles beating up and down the highway, summer vacation, Richardson Highway and Glen Highway, and so you get to meet a lot of people that are in the travel industry and tourism industry, and I would just like to have some assurance after meeting with people in the industry, from large travel industry people down to the very small mom and pops, that there is, in these 18 members, that there's some people that are represented from the bottom end of the tourism, your smaller mom-and-pop operators, that they have a voice at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Comment, Senator McCullough.
Through the chair, that is their intent. And in fact, in the letters of support, you'll see there's a couple of really good letters, but one comes from the Alaska Garden Gate B&B Cottages, in the Mat-Su, and if I might, Mr. Chairman, just read a little passage. She says, you know, hello, Senator McGuire, thanks for introducing the bill. I have a bed and breakfast in Palmer, so I'm relatively new to how all this works, but I wanted to say appreciate the efforts to stabilize our tourism marketing. It's a challenge at any level, et cetera, et cetera. And then my B&B is on course for the biggest year ever, but I can't afford to do extensive marketing myself for my small business. So you do have a lot of small people out there, and it's their intent to include them, but I'd also like you to get them on record as well.
Thank you, Chairman. Very good. Thank you. Senator Bishop. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering, I'm looking at page 3, line 16, and it says, a majority of the membership of the full board constitutes a quorum, which means that you have to have 11 members in attendance. And when we're working regionally, that might be, it might create a challenge depending on travel. So from past service on Alaska Suicide Prevention Council, we allowed the, I believe that we've allowed the non-voting members to actually help constitute a quorum, but not count as part of the full board. And the reason is because then you can get the quorum at 9, which is your 18 members that are public members, or even, my point is your quorum is maybe hard to reach at 11. And so you might want to check with legal to see if there's a way, because you're specifically outlining on 16 that a majority of the membership of the full board constitutes a quorum, but you're excluding two of your, the senator and the a representative from voting. So we had a challenge with that on, and actually came back and changed language before so that the board could do business. And so it was additive. If your House member or your representative showed up, it helped you reach the quorum. But if they didn't show up, it didn't disadvantage the public members who were very encouraged to show up.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I am open to that change, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, a lot of us have come into public service having served in other capacities. I'm getting nods behind me. So if you'd like to offer that amendment, even conceptually, I'm open to it, or if we'd like to do it in the other body, however you'd like to handle it, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Fairclough.
Yes, Senator McGuire, I think we're going to we'll hold this bill and do a CS, because there's been enough small suggestions to amendments that we'll just do it all in one bill and bring her back.
Thank you.
Okay, any other committee questions before we go to public testimony? Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My chief of staff slipped me a note to clarify on the record that I may have made it sound as if the private members are allowed to receive per diem. And he's saying that travel and per diem are only paid for the two legislative members and the commissioner.
Okay. Very good. Then let's go to public testimony at this point in time. Actually, Senator McGuire, you referred to some of your some of the questions to the folks here from the industry. So why don't we start with them, Bill both of you want to join us. And if you could please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, Senators. My name is Bill Pedler. I serve as the chair of the Government Relations Committee of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And in my daytime job, I run a small company called Nightly Tours, which specializes in inbound vacation planning for guests coming to the state of Alaska. So that is my background. I have been in this business far too long, since 1978. I began my career in Whitehorse, emigrated to the United States, and have been involved in Alaska tourism ever since. We as the industry feel that this is a great step forward. And in terms of some questions that were asked, the one thing that we have learned over the years in the Alaska travel industry is that diversity makes us strong. We have a very diverse board within the Travel Industry Association representing the five, what we call the five major regions of the state. We certainly believe that any marketing board should be represented with the same diversity as well as large, small, and medium-sized businesses. So from that standpoint, we as the industry tried not to get too specific to back us into a corner with in case there wasn't somebody qualified and making appointments and recommendations to the governor that didn't make sense. But we know that the diversity of the marketing board only works because there is a diversity. So the board size of 18 is actually down from the current ad hoc board that works with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, which is around 30 members. The attainment of quorum has never been a problem. The industry is very committed to ensuring that the best use and the maximum return for state funds is achieved. So we feel that while a board of 18 seems large, we understand that. With the diversity of our membership, we feel that the representation 18 allows us to do that and make good recommendations and input to the expenditure of valuable resources. The recommendations that have come out of this committee, I think, are wonderful. We as the industry, are very thankful for the input. If I can answer any other questions, I'd be more than happy to.
Senator Olson?
Mr. President, what's your view on having a sunset for this board?
I think that's, if I was in your shoes, I think that's just good business. I think everything deserves to be reviewed. I think a sunset makes sense, relook at everything, and allows us to take a good look at what we've done and where we're going. So I think that's fine.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
What would be a fair number of years to see if it was indeed getting traction and serving the public's interest?
I kind of figured that question was coming, so I think to be realistic, I think you need a 5-6 year window. Marketing is something that is cumulative in its effect. We have seen, as the reinvestment has occurred in these last 3 years, we've seen a steady growth in visitor arrivals, and we think that a 5-6 year window, I think, would give us time to truly evaluate where we've been and where we're going.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Olson. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, on the sunset date, from a legislative budget and audit perspective, sometimes there's hesitation for those of us who serve there in putting the date out too far for the first time so that bad habits don't start. And the only reason I say that is because one of the things that we want to ensure is that the public is able to participate, that meetings are noticed, that you're handling the people's money and that investment wisely. And so I just didn't want it to go unnoticed that I would support something much lower, only because we want to make sure if we're standing up an environment that that environment is functioning well for the people, not a reflection of you not doing the work that we've set you out to do, but just to make sure that those good methodologies, that good criteria is in place so that the people are able to participate. So that being said, you certainly can comment on it if you want, but on the quorum issue, there are different ways to establish quorums, and I've asked my staff to try to find me the statutes where we had to go in and change the Alaska suicide prevention so that legislative participation didn't hamper the work of the board. And that's not a reflection of anyone not being interested. It's just that sometimes boards set meetings at times where legislators have commitments other places for state business, and so that state business takes priority sometimes differently than the board needing to take on something. So one of the ways that we might want to consider a quorum is at least one representative from each region being at a meeting. It doesn't have to just be based on a maximum majority of participants. So I just would throw that out to you and the sponsor to consider. And sometimes the board can allow that through executive session, that they can delegate their authorities to more of an executive team. But again, my issue of bringing up any change on the quorum only has to do with your functionality. And when it may have been more of a dramatic effect on Alaska Suicide Prevention Council because there were three members of each legislative body. So we were swinging the vote by not showing up. So we had six participants, two from the majority and one from the minority that were appointed on that council. So maybe two doesn't do it, but I'd just like to hear your comments on quorum accomplishment for such a large board.
I think when you brought forward that suggestion, Senator, I think all of us in the back of the room looked at each other and sort of nodded that probably nine voting members attending would be good for a quorum that way. You know, that way the people would, we'd always have nine people. I can also tell you that having been involved in cooperative marketing in some form or another for a good portion of my career, getting a quorum has, of course, having said this, the very first meeting we'll have a problem, but we have never had a quorum because there is rabid interest in Alaska tourism marketing, and the members are very dedicated, and the industry members pay their own way, so that's a high level of commitment to the process, and they have for years, and they always show up because they care. Because it is their livelihood, so they are heavily invested.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Okay. Anybody else want to testify there? Okay. All right.
Thank you for your time, Senator.
Thank you, gentlemen. Okay. Robbie, did you want to testify? If you could, Robbie, please put your name on the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robbie Graham. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts this morning. And not unlike the gentleman behind me and many who have spoken about this bill, I also have a long career in tourism marketing and appreciate all of the work and the necessity that takes to make Alaska a very wonderful and desirable location for our visitors. But I think it's important in terms of context to recognize the collaboration that the department has had with the industry for more than 40 years. The state and the industry work together and have worked together from the days of AVA and the division through the amended construct of marketing and sales, and through the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and then later the Alaska Travel Industry Association. So most recently, we've had a more formal collaborative relationship, I would say, through an MOU that was signed in FY12 and reiterated again in FY13 when the legislature moved the implementation of the tourism marketing program to the department. Given Commissioner Bell's experience in the tourism industry and myself as well, we were uniquely qualified to step up and implement the program without losing a step. The tourism marketing program is, as you know, now in the Division of Economic Development, and I do want to recognize the expertise not only of our director of the Division of Economic Development, Joe Jacobson, who came to us from ASME and 5 years as the manager, the director of international marketing for seafood, as well as Kathy Dunn, who's our tourism marketing manager, and she has more than 20 years' experience in the tourism industry, and we have two development specialists, Jesse Carlstrom from Fairbanks and Carol McConkie, who lives here in Juneau. So our relationship with the industry is integrated, and the way it's structured is through the marketing committee and the board of ATIA. The industry advises and consults with us, and we direct the program. The department participates in industry meetings and events, and we're at the table when the industry association meets. Kathy Dunn, who I mentioned, helps co-chair the marketing committee meetings. And we're working on everything from tourism trade shows to all kinds of programs where the industry and the state come together to market Alaska as a destination. So if I may just take 1 second to brag on a couple of the accomplishments that we've had in the tourism marketing program. Recently, I think you all received a copy of the economic impact study that shows that summer visitation is back to where it was in 2007 and 2008 at 1.96 million visitors last summer. Our annual conversion rate, the people that inquire about visiting Alaska and then actually come to Alaska, is about 12%, and that's wonderfully high. And over a four-year period, the conversion rate is closer to 30%. So that means of everyone who inquires, 30% actually visit the state. We've generated more than 16 million in awareness through our public relations program. We've been in the New York Times recently, Sevier, Men's Journal, a number of digital print and broadcast media. We have a Facebook page and a Twitter handle and a Pinterest page, so there's lots of social media going on. We've also created a cultural tourism program, and Senator Hoffman will probably remember several years ago when the implementation came to the department that was a discussion that we had, and the program, the pilot program currently is focused on Northwest Alaska, but we are moving to take that program statewide in the next couple of years. We've launched a Spanish and Chinese language website. We're going to emerging markets, Brazil and India, and we certainly were very integral with the industry in bringing Iceland Air to Alaska several years ago. So in conclusion, I'll just say that the department manages 6 domestic and 5 international contracts. We have also brought together other state marketing programs, what we call the Marketing Partners Group, and that includes state parks and ferries and watchable wildlife, ASME, Alaska Grown, to look at how we can better market the state in all aspects. So we're proud of the work that we're doing. We're thankful, very thankful, that the industry is a good partner. We're supportive of a very strong collaboration with the industry, and we look forward, as well as the industry, I'm sure, to a very successful 2014 season. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Very good. Any questions for Robbie? Okay. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Testimony. Okay, was there anyone else to testify? Anyone else here? Okay, sir, I don't have your name on the sheet, but you're welcome to join us.
Thank you. Chris Pelosi, Department of Law. And we just have two small technical problems with the bill.
Okay. What's your name, please?
Chris Pelosi with the Department of Law.
Okay. Chris. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. The first issue we had with this bill was on page 2, line 30, where it says the members are 18 members are who are members of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And traditionally, bills don't specify a specific organization. And I'd like to point you to language in a similar statute, AS 4398040, which involves a similar organization, and that one says that members should be nominated from the leading nonprofit trade association. And so effectively it's the same thing, but if you put in Alaska Travel as industry association, you run the risk that if that association is dissolved, the statute doesn't make any sense anymore. So it'd probably be better just put in the leading trade association or some association that means almost the same thing but is a little more generic.
Okay, I'm sorry, what line was that again, please?
That was on page 2, line 30, which is 4433136B1.
Okay, thank you.
And the second issue that the department has with the bill as written is on page 3, line 9, or that section, which is section C. And as currently written, that gives power to the board to appoint members, gives the power to appoint members of the board to a private organization and allows the governor only some sort of a veto over that. And that is probably an unconstitutional limitation of the governor's authority. Under the Alaska Constitution, the governor is the only appointing authority. There can be no sharing of power except expressly provided in the Constitution itself. The legislature can no more provide to the governor to share power with an agency created by it than it can share that power itself. So our suggestion is that some of that be removed and the ability to appoint the board members is solely resting in the governor.
Okay. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if you can provide us amended language then.
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, I can provide you amended language. I would probably suggest for that part, just have the governor's should appoint members and delete out the other part about the list of nominations coming from the industry.
We do have our ledge legal online as well, and we may want to get their opinion as to why it was written the way it was. Just to, you know, you get two lawyers together, you guys have difference of opinion, right? Let me go to Senator Denley.
Mr. Chair, just a question: was this an issue that was discussed with the senator?
Through the chair, Senator Denley, we did not. I discussed this issue with Department of Commerce.
Just through the chair, I would suggest that occur. Thank you.
Very good. Well, we do appreciate, Chris, we do appreciate you bringing these suggestions to us. Did you have anything else before you leave?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. And, yeah, I would encourage the sponsor and you perhaps to get together on your suggestions. Thank you. Hillary Martin, she is our ledge legal. Is she online? Okay. Hillary, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still online.
Okay. Did you hear some of the concerns brought up by the Department of Law? And do you agree with them? And what's your thoughts?
My name is Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services. I did hear their concerns. As for naming the Alaska Travel Industry Association, that's really just a decision that the legislature can make. There is a risk, though, that if they change their name or they dissolve, then the statute would have to be changed. I don't see necessarily a legal problem with naming them, but it is just something to be aware of. And as for the appointing from a list, I think it's a little unclear whether it's okay. I think there's no real clear answer as to whether it's allowable for them to submit a list and then the governor has to pick from that list. I think that including that if the governor rejects that the governor can reject the list and they submit another list, I think it makes it better, but we don't have a, there's no real great answer as to whether it's clearly constitutional or clearly unconstitutional.
Okay, Senator Dunleavy, question?
Are there boards that exist? Department of Education or Fish and Game, that process, and I think Senator Kelly is dealing with an issue too, in which they, there's some appointments that don't go through the governor. just curious, there seems to be some confusion on this issue.
Ms. Martin, can you enlighten us any?
So are you asking, are there boards where the governor doesn't appoint at all, or
no.
I don't quite.
Through the chair, does the governor appoint from a list of several that comes from, for example, the commissioner of education? I think commissioner of education, that process I believe comes from the board, a list, and then the governor selects them. I could be wrong, and so I'm asking if I'm off base on this, but. Again, there's an issue that Senator Kelly's dealing with, and I think there's some others that don't necessarily follow what we just heard earlier from law.
Through the chair, I believe there are other boards where there is a list that's submitted to the governor, and then but the governor can reject the list. Unfortunately, I can't name you specifically which boards it is offhand, but I believe that this does happen in other places.
Okay. Well, very good. I think what we'll do then, maybe Senator McGuire, why don't you join us, please? Senator McGuire, I think this is the first and only committee that this bill's heard, and so there's just been some I think good suggestions to your bill.
Yes.
that we'd like to incorporate into a CS. I would like you or your staff to perhaps get with the Department of Law, make sure there's not any pending concerns there. It sounds like our legal feels like the bill's okay, but let's try to get that smoothed out as much as we can, and then you work with Christine in my office, and then we'll come back with a CS as soon as we can. Go ahead.
Through the chair, and I was blindsided by that opinion by the Department of Law. So I can just let you know that our Ledge Legal has approved my draft, and I'm happy to change the language like we did in the Competitiveness Review Board. Brett and I were just talking about that you can change it to the leading nonprofit in the area of tourism. I'm amenable to that. With respect to the appointments, there's one thing I'd be amenable to, which would be to say that the leading nonprofit in the area of tourism makes a list of a recommendation list, if you will, and then if the governor doesn't choose from that list, they can submit another list. But I think what's really important there is, and it does happen, and we know this just happened with the political appointment recently and other things, that that you do have it coming up from the grassroots level.
Okay. Well, very good. Then let's continue working on this. It's a good bill. I think a bill that the committee supports and wants to keep moving. But we'll try to smooth things out a little bit. And again, if as a lawyer yourself, Senator McGuire, you know that you can. Two lawyers will never agree on anything. So if it's
so, just agree with me.
Yeah. So it would be good though if you could spend a little time with the Department of Law. But yeah, certainly Ledge Legal thinks your bill is good, and we think it's good. We'll just work out some minor rough edges here, and we'll continue on.
Thank you,
Senator McGuire. Okay, well, that concludes our business for today. I am not going to adjourn because we have high hopes, don't we, Senator Kelly? We have high hopes we'll see a Senate Bill 138 yet today, perhaps even Senate Bill 64. If not, then certainly we are going to take those up first thing tomorrow. I guess we need a brief at ease. Let's just take a brief at ease.
Okay, we're going to bring Senate Finance meeting to order. The time is 5:15. Today is Thursday, March 13th. With us is Co-Chairman Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chairman Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. So we have the full committee. Thank you for coming back. We are only going to take up one bill tonight, and that is Senate Bill 64, Omnibus Crime Bill. And so I think the first thing we need to do is adopt the CS version L. Do we have a motion for that, Senator Kelly? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the Senate Finance CS for Section 4 version L.
Okay, any objections? Seeing and hearing no objections, we have version L, as in Larry, in front of us. And Christine Marsigan, would you please join us here and explain the changes?
For the record, my name is Christine Marsigan, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer in the Senate Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, there are a few changes in the CS for Senate Bill 64 version L. The most substantial of these changes is adding the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission back in the bill as it was in the original version D. There are, however, three significant changes. The first change is that we went from 10 members to 12. In the original 12 members, there were two legislators from both bodies in the legislature serving on the commission. We reduced two so that you only have one legislator from the Senate and one legislator from the House.
Christina, so we went from 12 to 10.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay.
We went from 12 to 10.
Thank you.
We're all about reducing.
Right, reducing. Yes. Okay.
The second significant change, of course, is that there is a sunset set for 2018. And that is contingent on the third item, which is an audit. The only other changes, sir, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee, were small editorial changes that were caught during this day or so of waiting for fiscal notes. So the FASD language was moved up one, still intact, but in a better place. Moved the word residential from a place where it did not need to be, and also added the word educational programming. And those changes, if you look on your version L, you'll find those on page 17.
Okay, Christine, have you been in contact with the sponsor's office on these changes?
Yes, sir, I have. Members of the committee, I contacted the sponsor's office and worked with his staffer, Mr. Jordan Schilling, on the changes.
Okay, very good. And sponsor, Senator Coghill is here, so if there are some questions for him, we can address those as well. But why don't you go ahead and go through the fiscal notes then, the new fiscal notes. Are there questions before we go there? Senator Olson, you have a question?
I've got questions on the commission, but we can wait till after we go through the fiscal notes, and then I'll voice my questions that are there.
Okay. Very good. Christine?
As you will recall, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee, in our previous version, just still in this version, we moved two significant programs from the Department of Corrections to the Department of Health and Social Services. It was thought that by moving those programs, we would realize some cost savings, and that also it would be a good partnership, since as you heard in the testimony on this bill, there is significant overlap with recovery programs dealing with drug rehabilitation and other rehabilitative type programs. So there are now five new fiscal notes. Of the five new fiscal notes, two are in HES, two are in corrections, and then one is a corrected fiscal note from the Judicial Council that addresses the costs of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. In your packets, or around your paperwork, which I know there is many, I actually put in a chart showing all of the new fiscal notes as compared to the old fiscal notes.
Can you show us that chart, Christine?
Yes.
So we know what we're looking for. Does everybody have that? I'm not sure I have it. I don't think we have it.
This is my old.
All right, let's take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back. Christine?
Apologize for the delay, Mr. Chair. If you have the Senate Finance CS for SB 64 sheet in front of you, there is a chart below that shows all of the new fiscal notes in comparison to the old fiscal notes. So the new fiscal notes that go with version L, we can start with OMB component number 694. This would show 1603.7 in FY 2015, showing 2149.3 in 2016, and 2694.8 in the out years. Version L also has another fiscal note, and this would be Department of Corrections, which has 500. The components to be announced. There's also another fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services, component number 305. also from the Department of Health and Social Services, OMB component 320. And then a fifth fiscal note that is new, which replaces the old one, which is OMB component number 771.
Okay, so looks like bottom line is that the fiscal note for 2015 has been reduced by about half, from $6.9 million to $3.2 million.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. And then in 2016, again about half, $7.4 to $3.8.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
And the number of positions went from 23 through 34 to 17 to 28.
Yes, sir.
Correct? Okay. So what does that do? Well, and we can certainly bring up the Senator Coghill, what does that do to the program? It's my understanding the program's still intact. It's just most of the difference was going to Hess from corrections. Okay. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, the idea when we adopted the previous version by moving programs into Hess that was better equipped to deal and had infrastructure to deal with the grant recidivism fund that already had positions that could absorb some of those costs. So on that particular component, instead of ramping up a department with five or six positions, you basically cut it down to one position. By removing two members on the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission and with speaking with them about how many times they're actually required to meet, it would only be four times a year, they were able to reduce that fiscal note from three positions to 1.5 positions.
Okay. Was there anything else? And I'm going to bring up Senator Coghill just to make sure we haven't... his program, his great program here in a different direction. A question for Ms. Marsigan. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we talk about what happened to the $4 million worth of program receipts and how that's affected by the bill?
I believe we have somebody from Legislative Finance here that I will punt to, and hopefully they can help go through some of that, but in the short version, my understanding, Senator Fairclough, through the chair, is that one, since Hess already has a program going, they would contract out that program, and then the interagency receipts between Hess and the Grant Recidivism Fund from Department of Corrections would account for some of those funds.
Amanda, you want to join us here, please? And if you could put your name on the record for us, and then maybe if you want to add anything to what Ms. Marsigan said and see if there's additional questions. Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Amanda Ryder with Legislative Finance. My understanding is that that particular fund, the Health and Social Services, theirs is more accurate. It was general funds. We believe that the GF program receipts was probably overinflated and that that much GF program receipts for that program was not available. So the update, these fiscal notes are updated and are more accurate reflection of the program.
Question? We can come back to you. If you're thinking, go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Rader, on the, I don't see any receipts reflected, or I see a very small amount of receipts. So the receipts were at, and they very well appear to be overinflated. If that's right, $4.4 million almost. at least in fiscal note from the Department of Corrections, number 7 that we had previously. And so I see interagency receipts of 96.5. Is that paying for the health position over in... I see interagency receipts under fiscal note 320, OMB code, and I see interagency receipts on 305. And that's it. So there's going to be a whole bunch of money coming in at $10 a piece, whatever that number is. And so is that going to just be contracted out so we're not seeing it? Is that the issue? That they would contract with a private. So the money's still coming in, but we're not carrying it on our books because it's going to be a contract or a grant that's let?
Ms. Marsigan?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, that is correct. My understanding from my discussions with the Department of Health and Social Services, there is an already existing program for testing that they would then be contracting out to do these services.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then they have enough grant fund authorization that they don't need an increase in that. Is that what's happening? They have enough capacity inside their budget that they can spend this extra money without needing additional appropriation power?
This is the idea, Senator, through the chair, Senator Faircloth. Yes, that is the idea. Currently, the program that they have now is up in 3 different communities. Ideally, this program this big is being phased in. And so that's why you also on the correction side have an increase in that first and second year, but then you have decreases in the out years. Ideally, if the purpose of this program is to reduce recidivism and bring down these rates, ideally you hopefully would not be having increases in the out years and would need more receipt authority. Ideally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we do have somebody online with the Department of HESS. Tony Piper, is that who you've been working with? Does that sound right?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I believe that is the person that runs the ASAP program.
Yeah, ASAP, yeah. Okay. Additional questions? Senator Olson for Christine or for Senator Coghill?
Actually, for Senator Coghill.
Okay. All right, let's bring up Senator Coghill. Thank you, Christine and Amanda. Senator Coghill, welcome to Senate Finance.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill, before we go to questions, do you have any comments? And you and I have not talked directly, but I think my staff has talked to your staff, and I was told that you were okay with the changes made.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill from the North Pole Fairbanks area, thank you very much for hearing this bill. Yes, we looked at the CS, thank you very much. I think many of the things that you've done in there helped tighten it up, some of the good questions. So there's always things that I'd like to do that we can't always get done, but it has tightened it up. I can tell you one of the things that I will continue to work on that I think you heard was the licensing provisions that both you and I have worked on and are continuing to work on, but they just couldn't get settled while we're moving this bill along. So my expectation is to see them before we gavel out this year, Mr. Chairman. So that is something that I'll continue working on. This particular area, the funding structure of getting it to recidivism is one of the things that I appreciate the work that you were able to do. I just try to create a mechanism so we could do it. So the reduction of the commission is reasonable. Having eyes on the legislature gets us to have some buy-in on some of the things that I'd like to see the commission put together. But at this point, I am satisfied, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Olson, was your question answered?
No, Mr. Chairman. Senator Coghill, I applaud you in taking on this monumental type of thing, and recidivism, new prisons are something that has been during my legislative career here and trying to curb that amount. But as we look at the declining revenues and the idea of a commission that's out there, it's not something I'm necessarily in favor of. And I guess my question is, why can't a task force or some kind of audit capability take the place of the commission so that we don't have this another draw on the finances there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I share the same sentiment, and I tried to think of ways that we could get the kind of caliber we needed to get the information we need. And I think in order to do it, we need to commission a group of people that are the industry best, and hence you see asking for Superior Court, Supreme Court justices, public defenders, prosecutors, Native population, to assemble those people and say, are we actually doing the best we can under the very rigid sentencing laws that we've established over the last 25 years? And I think it just needs somebody who works in them day by day at a very high professional level to come back with some good recommendations to us. Ensuring public safety, maybe some flexibility in our laws. The reason we went to prescriptive laws before was we had too much disparity in our sentencing, but now we have too much rigidity that needs to be looked at. Our DUI laws have become very complex and probably in some of our sentencing structure needs to be lined up better. So there's probably about three areas in the criminal and probably in our DUI and our misdemeanor level that probably need to be looked at seriously by practitioners. So I think you put a tight timeline on it. I heard a judge actually tell me, give us a tight timeline so we just get in, get the work done, get out of there. But I wanted it to go over several legislative sessions so that you had buy-in from the legislature. But I understand why keeping the tight timeline is important. I think one of the judges who I've consulted with agrees with you on that.
Continue, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, sir.
As you look at the commission, I thought you wanted the best and the brightest. And then I saw four legislators on there, and I was, gee, where's this room for improvement? But my real question has to do with the makeup of the commission. As we look at some of the issues that are out there, some of the major issues have to do with mental health. And we've seen Dr. Jeff Jesse and his ideas on recidivism, having seen many programs throughout the nation, particularly down in Texas and otherwise. I guess, why don't we specifically have a position that mandates or that has a seat reserved specific for mental health or some of the behavioral sciences that are out there that I think contribute a large amount to the recidivism that we're trying to curb?
Mr. Chairman, Donnie Olson, Senator Olson, I'm sorry. I actually agree with you that the mental health and our social service world needs to be at the table. I guess probably one of the things I struggled with in putting this commission together is to have it small enough where they could actually make the decisions. Every one of these, whether it's the Department of Corrections or Social Services, have to deal with it, but they're not on the actual committee, but they'll have to be there. We have a criminal justice working group right now that is made up of a lot of these people. They don't have any authority structure that they can work on. They bring suggestions to us. This is one coming back with some significant recommendations. It'd be my expectation. They will have both the mental health people. They will have, Jess Jesse and his company there. They will have the social services people there. They will have other service. For example, the domestic violence people wanted to be on the board. All of them should be at the table. In order for us to keep it compacted based on law recommendations, they will take them into account, but at the end of the day, we're looking for sentencing structure reform.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Olson. Senator Prickoff?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the combined total of new travel that is being added by this, and it's over $50,000. And I'm wondering if you can speak specifically to the OMB component 694. It's from the Department of Corrections, and they're asking for $23,000 in perpetuity. But I really can't see how it can be ongoing. So it says the travel is anticipated for a statewide implementation. But then it goes on in perpetuity to establish that. So can you speak to that particular $23,000 for each year?
Okay. Looks like Senator Coghill's punted to his trusty staff, and I got my trusty staff there, so whoever wants to take it on.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair. I actually think this is best answered by the department themselves. We do have somebody here from the Department of Corrections, and if we could have them address that, that would be best.
Thank you.
Ron Taylor, is he here? Oh, you're not Ron.
No, I'm not.
Okay. You want to take it on? If you could, put your name on the record, please.
Thank you. Leslie Houston, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Corrections. And I believe the question is in relation to the $23,000 in travel associated with the implementation of PACE for probation and parole statewide. And these funds would be necessary for the response to the swift, certain, and short terms where they would have to go out and pick up that offender. And a lot of times there are travel costs associated with that for the probation officer.
Mr. Chairman, $50,000 worth of new travel.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Faircloth, and maybe I'm not seeing the right thing. I'm seeing $23,000.
The $50,000 is the combined group. We have multiple fiscal notes. It's not just your department.
Thank you. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. 23. I've got it.
Thank you.
Okay, additional questions for anybody? I think Senator Bishop had one, but he stepped out for a minute. So, Senator Olson?
No, Senator Dunleavy, I thought I had.
Senator Dunleavy? Senator Bishop's in there, yeah. Okay. All right, let's take a brief at ease, just quick. Okay, we're back. If there's no additional questions for the sponsor, Senator Coghill, for my staff who worked diligently on the CS, thank you very much. For Hess on the and corrections on the fiscal notes, then I think we're ready to move this bill on. Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 64, version L28-LSO116, dated 3/12/2014, with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, bill moves out of committee. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Senator Coghill, for your diligence on working with us and seeing a good bill pass out of the Senate Finance Committee. In conferring with the co-chair here, and he is having a constituent meeting with some folks from Fairbanks, that is all that we have today. We are going to meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. He is still hoping that we'll be taking up Senate Bill 138, which is the gas bill. And as you know, that's all we'll take up tomorrow. We only have an hour. And then on Monday and Tuesday, we'll take up various bills. And then on Wednesday, I think the co-chairman wants to start on the operating budget. So, Mr. Co-Chair, is there anything else you wanted to
add at this particular time. I was just we just passed out the Senate Bill 64. Folks are signing the sheets, and also I was going over what you anticipate next week. That hopefully, well, tomorrow hopefully you'll have Senate Bill 138, and then Wednesday the operating budget.
We should have SB 138
tomorrow. What? Use the microphone.
We should have SB 138 tomorrow. I have not. We anticipated that it would be here tonight, the CS, but it is not. I got to believe it's going to be ready for us tomorrow. And if not, we'll just do what we did today, which is recess to a call of the chair if we have to, and we'll get it out tomorrow sometime.
Okay. And then still plan on taking up the operating budget about mid-next week?
Midweek, later in the week, yeah.
Okay.
We had all the closeouts, I think there's one or two hanging out there. Two? Okay. A couple hanging out there. Everybody's wrapping up really quickly. And we anticipated that the closeouts would happen on Wednesday, or excuse me, the 18th, and that we wouldn't actually get it before the committee until around the 20th or so. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but.
Okay. Well, for sure, Monday and Tuesday, we're taking up bills. In fact, Senate Bill 80 is the out-of-state physicians. Senate Bill 108, limit public access to criminal records. Senate Bill 161, autopsies and death certificates. And Tuesday, March 18th, scheduled is SCR 16. I think that's yours, Senator Kelly, requesting the governor to investigate coal reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And House Bill 23 is the Kinnick Arm Crossing, which we started but didn't get too far on. And then Wednesday, currently we're showing that we'll start the operating budget. And that's Wednesday the 19th, going through Thursday the 20th and Friday the 21st. Okay. Any questions? All right. If not, then we're adjourned until tomorrow night.